Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
That's right, Buzzkillers. The rate at which questions and suggestions for an episode on a specific topic have been coming in has increased something like 300 or 400% in this past week. Buzzkillers have been asking lots of questions about the Watergate scandal of the early 70s that brought down the Nixon presidency, and Buzzkill Nation clearly wants to know whether the common and well-known stories about Watergate are true and historically sound. Well, that's what I'm here for. And I'm especially happy to talk about Watergate myths because the details of that tense period in American history have been steamrolled by those two great myth-making machines. The first one is movies, and the second one is the need for individual heroes. For so many of us, our understanding of Watergate and the unraveling of the Nixon presidency is defined by the book and film All the President's Men. And many of us believe that the Nixon presidency was brought down almost solely by the heroic efforts of two young, energetic, truth-seeking, and fearless journalists. And of course, I'm referring to Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein of the Washington Post. Now, in the first place, Buzzkillers, I don't want you to think I'm using the terms young, energetic, truth-seeking, and fearless in any sarcastic way or snarky way. Woodward and Bernstein were all those things, and they were very important in the history of Watergate, but their roles in discovering the extent of the scandal and bringing about Nixon's resignation have been raised to mythic levels in our culture. And I want to stress that Woodward and Bernstein themselves have never claimed to be the lone heroes charging up the hill of righteousness in the Watergate affair. In fact, Woodward himself has frequently complained that their role in Watergate has been, and I'm quoting here, mythologized to the point of absurdity. But as we'll see in this episode, it's almost impossible to keep the history of any event in balance whenever the movie version of that history establishes itself in the cultural consciousness. You remember the Watergate story, Buzzkillers, but let's go over some basic details. On June 17, 1972, five men were arrested for breaking into the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee at the Watergate office complex in D.C. It turned out that the Watergate burglars were partly funded by the official Committee for the Re-election of the President. That's Nixon's famous CREEP Committee. Subsequent investigations, of course, revealed that important members of the president's staff had been involved in directing the break-in and involved in other, what you might call, dirty tricks, what were called dirty tricks at the time. When the famous Nixon tapes were discovered and the Supreme Court ruled that Nixon had to release them, things went downhill for the president very quickly. It became clear that Nixon had used federal officials even to try to stop investigations of the Watergate crime, and Nixon had to resign in 1974 rather than be impeached and removed from office. And we'll attack the major Watergate myths one by one after this word from the sponsorship department here at the Institute. Buzzkillers, we're down here in the sponsorship department to tell you something that you already know, but to ask you to act on that knowledge. And what you already know is that for centuries, four centuries, going back to Julius Caesar, rip-off razor companies have been ripping you off. It's got to stop. You know these big rip-off razor companies, they make a small change in their blades, they change the packaging, they change the TV ad or something tiny, and then they upcharge you for that sort of ridiculous newest version. Well, you know, and I know, and Julius Caesar knew, that the only way to break that cycle is to go to Harry's. Harry's doesn't do that. Harry's razors charge you a fraction of what the ripoff razor companies charge. Their five-blade razors are fantastic. Caesar wrote about this. I came, I saw, I went to Harry's, and I've shaved better than ever in my life. They have a soft flex hinge. They have a trimmer blade, a lubricating strip. The weighted, ergonomically designed handle is fantastic, makes it easier to shave. And I love the angle of the blades. I know this isn't in the ad copy that we're given to read, but that's what I think makes the Harry's experience so wonderful. And that's what Lincoln thought. Lincoln used the trimmer blade to keep his beard in trim, it kept it looking nicely, won the Civil War. Cause and effect, Buzzkillers. Harry's blade prices are still $2 rather than the $4, $5, $6 you pay for the ripoff razor companies. And they do this, they're able to do this because they own their own factory in Germany where they make their blades. They can oversee production. They can make the changes that they know will work. They produce the highest quality razor blades possible, and they pass the savings on to you. Now, they're making you the offer that they've made to Julius Caesar, to Hadrian, who kept his beard in trim using Harry's razors, and to other great people throughout history. They'll send you their popular trial set for free when you go to harrys.com. That trial set comes with the razor, the five-blade cartridge, the handle, the shaving gel. You just pay a pittance, $3. Talk about follow the money, buzzkillers. Follow the money like in the Watergate movie, right? Follow the money that you've been throwing down the drain with the ripoff razor companies and get it back and only pay $3 for this fantastic offer. Why wouldn't you do this? It's perfect. Plus, just for you buzzkillers, just for Buzzkill Nation, enter the code BUZZKILL, B-U-Z-Z-K-I-L-L, at checkout, and you get the post-shave balm for free. You know what Lady Buzzkill thinks about the post-shave balm. It's what keeps us together as a couple. It's great. You'll look better, and your face will feel better all day. Your subscription plan is customizable in terms of shipping frequency, and you can cancel it at any time. Let me repeat, Buzzkillers, and let me urge you to do this today. Go to harrys.com. Enter the code BUZZKILL at checkout. You get the razor, the blades, the shave cream, and the post-shave balm for free. If you do it now, you'll start enjoying a whole new world of better and more affordable shaves. Okay, now back upstairs to the research department. Okay, and we're back. Now, before I forget, I want to acknowledge not only the work of the historians and researchers here at the Institute, but the help and advice I've received from Professor Matthew Pressman at Seton Hall, who, by the way, will be on the show in a couple of weeks, and other experts. But the dominant historian of this subject is Professor Joseph Campbell at American University, and we've relied on his work heavily. His important book, entitled Getting It Wrong, Debunking the Greatest Myths in American Journalism, is on the Buzzkill bookshelf. Get it, Buzzkillers. It'll open your eyes about a lot of what we generally think of as true in recent U.S. history. Well, the first Watergate myth we want to examine is the idea that the Washington Post discovered all the important events in the Watergate scandal. In the first place, the June 17, 72 break-in at the DNC offices at the Watergate complex was a crime. We tend to forget that it was a crime. And the Washington, D.C. police were the first people to investigate it. And in fact, the police were the first to come to the conclusion that the Watergate burglars weren't just snooping around. They were planning to bug, that is, of course, place tiny microphones, in the Democratic offices to record conversations and gain information that could be used against the Democratic Party in the upcoming election. Journalists covering the police beat at the Washington Post naturally got word of the break-in through normal police sources. And one of the things that's usually overlooked in the standard Watergate story is that all the other newspapers and news outlets got the same information at roughly the same time. And they all started working on the story with, of course, varying degrees of success. But they got on it right away. The Washington Post put the story on its front page, which some of the other newspapers didn't do, and which may have been one of the reasons they got so much more attention. But the crucial point here, Buzzkillers, is that lots of different news outlets, as well as federal agencies and congressional committees, were responsible for breaking elements of the Watergate story as it spread. The Senate Committee Investigating Watergate, known officially as the Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities, and led by Senator Sam Ervin from North Carolina, was perhaps the most important. And I distinctly remember the Duchess of Buzzkill, my mother, having a Support Your Uncle Sam t-shirt with Senator Ervin's picture on it. Oh, those were the days. So Woodward and Bernstein and many other reporters, both at the Washington Post and in other major newspapers, did an excellent job of reporting the work that official authorities were doing and reporting on the evidence that congressional committees were uncovering, as well as reporting the leaks about that evidence. And I'm stressing the word reporting here because that's what they did. They reported on these things that were being done by other people. They uncovered relatively little themselves. Now, the second biggie, the second Watergate myth, was that the Washington Post reporting ended the Nixon presidency. This is one of my favorite topics, Buzzkillers, because of a great graphic I found depicting Gerald Ford, Nixon's vice president, who became president, as you know, after Nixon resigned, promoting the Washington Post's employment classifications page, saying, "I got my job through the Washington Post." It perfectly sums up this myth, and we put it on the website as our image for this episode. The idea of the Washington Post ending Nixon's presidency almost alone completely overlooks the following facts. First, an enormous number of people and government agencies exposed all the details of the Watergate scandal, as I mentioned before. And secondly, it was congressional committees and the Supreme Court who ultimately sealed Nixon's fate, which, by the way, buzzkillers, is the way this system is supposed to work. Here is a brief, and I mean very brief, list of the entities involved in the investigation. The FBI, the Justice Department, special prosecutors, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and other federal judges. In terms of the heroes of Watergate, all of those entities, all of those people come before the journalists at any news outlet. So those are the two big myths, that the Washington Post both discovered the Watergate break-in and that they brought down the Nixon presidency. And we haven't even gotten to the famous deep throat character and the myths surrounding what he did and said. But we'll do that after this break. I wanted to take this break, Buzzkillers, to talk about our new partners, Eco Soap Bank. Clean water, proper sanitation, and hygiene are some of the most important factors in keeping rural and slum families healthy in the developing world. Unfortunately, hygiene is often overlooked as a public health intervention. In Cambodia specifically, 75% of rural families lack access to basic hygiene products, including soap. Our partners, our new partners at the Eco Soap Bank, are determined to meet this drastic hygiene need. Here's how they do it. Eco Soap Bank partners with hotels and guest houses in Cambodia to collect used bars of soap. They then purify and recycle them into new soap bars that are distributed to rural schools, clinics, and slum areas. Eco Soap Bank also provides hygiene classes to help communities stay healthy and prosper. To date, they've recycled 26,000 pounds of soap, and they've served 666,562 people, and it keeps rising every day. How can you help? Please go to ecosoapbank.org/donate or Google Eco Soap Bank Donate and give what you can. Your donation of, for instance, $25 helps provide soap and hygiene education for 250 Cambodians. I said helps provide. It does provide. $25 provides soap and hygiene education for 250 Cambodians. It saves and recycles 35 pounds of soap from the hospitality industry. That would all go down the drain. And it supports ongoing unemployment for local people in Cambodia. The Buzzkill Institute is committed to helping this great project by contributing $1 for every Buzzkiller who donates to the Eco Soap Bank. Go to ecosoapbank.org/donate and type Buzzkill in the comments section of the online donation form. It's as easy as that, Buzzkillers. A simple act to fill a basic need. Eco Soap Bank, because global hygiene is in your hands. Now back to the show. Okay, what about the deep throat Watergate myths I hear you saying? Well, these aren't as important as the ones I mentioned before the break, but they are a lot more fun. We know now that the famous deep throat character from All the President's Men was Mark Felt, longtime FBI agent, who'd become associate director of the FBI in 72. Felt's famous meetings with Bob Woodward were staged very effectively in the film All the President's Men. But two very dramatic moments involving Deep Throat in that movie are, you guessed it, myths. The first and easiest Deep Throat myth to bust is the now famous follow the money quote. You remember, in the movie, Woodward meets with Deep Throat in an underground parking garage and mentions all the different leads that he and Bernstein are pursuing. When Woodward mentions records of campaign funds, Deep Throat, played famously by Hal Holbrook, immediately interjects and tells Woodward to, quote, follow the money, unquote. Alas, as much as our quote or no quote department would love to have this as an episode of their own, we're busting it here. Deep Throat never advised Woodward to follow the money. That famous line was the result of dramatic license taken by the film's scriptwriters. In other words, the actor, Hal Holbrook, was the first person to utter that line in the Watergate context. See, as it turns out, Woodward and Bernstein, as well as other top reporters, were already convinced that the campaign funds question was a crucial aspect of the scandal. Their reporting helped show that some of Nixon's funds from the 1972 campaign were diverted to pay for the break-in. In effect, they were already following the money before Woodward's meetings with Deep Throat. And the other dramatic thing that Deep Throat says in All the President's Men is that Woodward and Bernstein's lives were in danger because of their investigative reporting. Again, this turns out to have been an exaggeration. Although Washington Post people took precautions and worried about their own offices being bugged by Nixon operatives, Woodward himself said later that there was no evidence of journalists' phones being tapped or of any of them placing their lives in danger because of their work. And it's pretty clear to researchers here at the Institute that if any phones were going to be tapped or people's lives were going to be threatened, the most likely targets would have been the staffers and assistants of the congressional committees who were doing all the heavy lifting in terms of uncovering the important evidence that showed the extent of the Watergate scandal, not the journalists who were reporting about people who were doing the actual work. Finally, let's get to one of the myths about the long-lasting impact of the whole Watergate saga. This is one I certainly believe, Buzzkillers, because it's what seems to have happened. And here it is. The work of Woodward and Bernstein, as represented by the book and the movie, was heroic and inspirational to the degree that young, college-bound students flocked to journalism departments and signed up to become journalism majors. Alas, the evidence is clear and the numbers are in. The growth of enrollment in journalism programs happened between 1967 and 1972, before the Watergate break-in. And scholars who've actually studied this issue chalk it up to, number one, the vast expansion in new colleges and increased enrollment in colleges as the baby boom generation became of college age in the mid-1960s. In other words, enrollment in all majors and concentrations of study grew during that period. The second thing is, many more women were going to college in the 1960s and were attracted to journalism as a major, no doubt due in part to important role models such as Martha Gellhorn and Jane Cramer and Mae Craig and Helen Thomas and others who'd been on television and been very visible. And the third reason is, of course, that journalism itself was expanding as a professional field. So it all happened before Watergate, and it all happened for very identifiable reasons. So let's wrap it up by saying, remember what I always say about movies and history, Buzzkillers. Movies invariably have a grossly disproportionate impact on the public's perception and understanding of history because, if they're produced well, movies are intended to be memorable. They're intended to get themselves fixed in the consciousness of viewers so that you'll like them and you tell your friends to go see them and they'll make more money. All of the President's Men did just that because it's a good movie, not because it's good history. And despite the efforts of experts and scholars and people here at the Institute, and even the people actually involved in the historical events depicted in All the President's Men, their efforts to expose some of the myths that the movies project, nothing has yet proved effective in changing that phenomenon. Nothing, that is, until the rise of Buzzkill Nation in the last couple of years. So go out there, Buzzkillers, and spread the word. Talk to you next week.